The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
It's good Monday. Thanks for being with us. Off we go into another week. We will have Bob Herrig from Augusta, and it is Masters Week. We very much look forward to that, as we do every year. Bob has written books on Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, Tiger and Phil, and he's got a new one coming up. So we will talk with Bob about Augusta this week. And is a guy like Brooks Koepka ready to break through this week, because last year he didn't do well? Is Scottie Scheffler rounding into form because he was just injured earlier this year? And what about Rory McIlroy? Is it time for him to finally be the guy, because it's been a long, long time, and yet he has two victories already this year on the PGA Tour? So Bob Herrig, senior golf writer for Sports Illustrated, from Augusta in the press room. That comes up in about 10 minutes. And then we'll have Daniel Rios, the Draft Nick. Draft Nick is with us. We are 2 weeks and counting away from the draft. We are going to have a draft night event at Harrah's, and I will give you more details on that. Draft Nick's going to be there, actually. So we'll get into the NFL draft with the Draft Nick, Daniel Rios. That comes up right around the corner. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. As always and through the years, that's Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate their support. So I've got the dog here with me today. I've got the dog with me, and who knows what mass chaos could break out at any moment. Oh my gosh. He breaks into mass chaos. This is beautiful. This is live. When the garage door opens, hey, Bogey. Bogey, come here. You want to be a star? Bogey. No? When mass chaos happens, it's the best. It's just the best. So I will work my way through this, because I love stuff like this. This is why we do what we do. If I could show you why this, oh, come on now. Come on, dude. He's a pup. He's 7 months old. Hey, Iron Man, I think we just roll with this. I'm good just rolling with this. There's no reason to dive out. Or maybe there is. I don't know. Well, he's so obnoxious. Let's take a break. And we'll be back with more after this timeout. Okay, we got the dog fixed. Oh man, we've been doing shows for years, and that's a good one. That's Iron Man. That's a keeper for the vault. However long the vault stays open after that last show. All right, I'm going to get myself back together here. The way that it went over the weekend was not good if you're a fan of Arizona sports, because the Diamondbacks are in Washington, D.C., and I took in their games. And then the Suns game was just dreadful. They've given up. But yesterday, Corbin Burnes was, again, not as effective. And here's what I'm hearing, okay? And here's what I believe to be true. The people that in my circles that I trust, whose opinions that I trust, they're the ones that say, you know, baseball is becoming a little bit like the other professional sports. And that is, the spring training is kind of like the NFL preseason, is kind of like the NBA, is kind of like the first few weeks of the season, guys just aren't really ready yet. And Corbin Burnes yesterday was good in moments, but not great overall. And the Diamondbacks, you lose 2-3 to Washington, that's disappointing. It just is. So now they're home. They have Baltimore, and then they have Milwaukee this week. I did take in some of their games, and I was, Corbin Carroll looks much better than he did a year ago at this time. They lose Ketel Marte with an injury. Who's going to step in? Who's going to be the guy that takes over? I still can't get over the dog. And so they're going to get back in the swing of things against Baltimore tonight. Tonight is the final four. Houston, I love Kelvin Sampson, and I've known Kelvin Sampson all the way back to the days when he was at Washington State. when I used to do the ASU games, and yeah, I'm dating myself here a little bit, but Kelvin Sampson was not really that embraceable of a figure. And as he's gotten older, he's much more embraceable. Loved how he said, yeah, we're not into the, his quote was along the lines of the, you know, the Toy Poodle League, which is the ACC, right after the game is over. And Houston just looks like a group of fun players. Florida, on the other hand, here's a coach from right here in the Valley, and Todd Golden went to Sunny Slope High School. And he has Florida playing at a level that I didn't see as the season progressed. I was one of those regular season guys. Yeah, it's one thing. And then they've turned it up three notches, and here they are in the national title game tonight. I am fine with this game. It's not going to get the big ratings point, and that's okay. It would if Duke were playing. Plain and simple. Plain and simple. And I think it's great when you see guys like Hakeem Olajuwon and Clyde Drexler and some of those great Houston teams through the years that are coming back, and the Phi Slamma Jamma, for those of us who remember those days, that was a golden time in basketball. It really was. What is not a golden time in basketball is the Suns. They've lost six in a row, and they have quit with a capital Q. And once again, you look at the Suns this year and say, what is Matt Ishbia really going to do? You can go fire your general manager. You can go turn your roster upside down. You don't have as many assets as you once had. The Go Suns, everything is great crowd, they've disappeared. The Kevin Durant, oh, this is the best thing ever crowd, they've disappeared. At times when I watch them play, the lack of effort is just enough to make me puke. And I've been one of the ones that points out that the NBA season really doesn't start till after the All-Star break and doesn't really get cranked up until about the third week in March. And then NBA basketball becomes a really good product. And NBA product in a lot of other cities, great product. Team like Portland, they just extended their GM. They should. They're fun to watch. How does the DeAndre Ayton deal look now? How do any of these deals really look now? And I just want this season to end because I don't like talking about the same thing over and over. I haven't included the Suns in the three-dot thoughts in, I don't know, a while, because there's really nothing there that's new. There's really nothing there to bring the sledgehammer out and say, let's hammer them on this front. And that's been done. It's been done and done and done. And Devin Booker can go score 40 and people can be amused or in awe of that. I just know that they keep losing. I don't care how many points somebody scores. If you don't have enough talent around him, yeah, it was like when he went for 70. Oh my gosh, it was amazing. He had nobody with him. So he had 40 yesterday against the Knicks, and he had nobody alongside of him that is a true star impact player. And you can say all day long, oh, they're going to get rid of Kevin Durant, and they're going to get rid of Bradley Beal, and they're going to find somebody. That all sounds prudent. I saw KD do a commercial for Dick's Sporting Goods the other night. Like, seriously, you're going to get yourself out there and do some branding because you know your season's been a total disaster, and you know you're going to go elsewhere, and you'll land on your feet. And you'll be around some players. If he goes to LA, it's not going to be pleasant with the Lakers for the Suns fans here. It's not. But the level of disgust about how there's not much effort, that's something you can look at coach and you can blow out another coach. And you can look at general manager and you can blow out another general. You can go change everybody out, but at the end of the day, do you have guys with grit? And I don't think this team has guys with grit. And go back to last summer when Kevin and Devin were playing in the Summer Olympics. It was, guys, be ready, because they're not going to play as much this season. There's load management going on behind the scenes. You can say whatever you want. There's load management. The best story in sports was Alex Ovechkin passing Wayne Gretzky and some of the locker room stuff that came out of it. I think for the NHL, we miss it here in the Valley. I do believe that it will be back. I do believe that there are the right people getting lined up to see it. And I miss the product here. I don't miss the ownership. I had some people that said, hey, you didn't do near enough, or you didn't say near enough about what was going on here, because it was the same old crapola week, month, year after year. Same groups that would come in year after year. There was never a commitment to winning. There was only a commitment to making money. Don't need that in sports ownership. Sports is a public trust. And that's kind of what's on my mind today. I will tell you that up next, it's Masters Week. I'm into that mind space. And we'll have Bob Herrig with us. That is right around the corner. And then the draft Nick, Daniel Rios. I'm Brad Sussmat. If you go to SI.com and you look for Bob Herrig's column on the start of the Masters, they just posted it today. The headline is, "The Masters has returned, the calm amidst the chaos that is pro golf today." I was like seeing Bob sitting across from him when it's time to go to the Masters. And the chaos was what I was going to lead with. I was reading your column, and you addressed it really well. I appreciate you coming from Augusta.
Yeah, it's we're still... I guess the good news is I think a lot of the discussion this week will just be about the golf. You know, it's we've been mired in this, you know, sort of controversy here for the last couple of years. And I don't know that we're any closer, but in a weird sort of way, we've come to accept it almost. Like, we get it. Like, it's, there isn't the animosity anymore. There's not this feeling that these guys are going to come to blows. The LIV guys and the PGA Tour guys get along. They're fine, you know. So the good news is we're going to get that now again this week. It's for the first time since the Open in July. We're going to have Brooks Koepka and Rory McIlroy in the same golf tournament. You know, we're going to have, you know, Bryson and you know, Scottie Scheffler in the same golf tournament. And that's, you know, there's so much rhetoric on all sides of this issue, but I just go back to, we don't have these guys playing together very often, except that it's great for the majors, but it's not great for the rest of golf. And, you know, this is a niche sport that really can't afford that, I don't think. And I wish they'd figure out a way to address it.
No, I thought it was well put. It's a good read over at SI.com. I want to take a few paces back, because people that take in our content, a lot of them are students, or a lot of them want to be in this business. And there's business leaders and executives, and they're like, how did Bob get to here? And I don't want to go through that whole journey. What I do want to ask you is, how do you go about Masters Week preparation in your role? You're here on a Monday as we talk. What are you going to do these next 2 days before, 3 days before it gets started?
Yeah, this is, we're chock full of interviews leading up to the tournament. I mean, it's mostly trying to find, you know, good stories to write leading up, preview stories, Rory, Scotty, you know, how's the golf course? Got a lot of rain Monday. How's the golf course going to play? You know, things like that. You know, how are the LIV guys going to integrate? Can Brooks Koepka get back in the mix? Had a bad year in the majors last year. I actually wrote about him last week. I went down to Miami for the LIV event. They had 12 guys. They have 12. There's 12 LIV guys in the Masters. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Sergio and DeChambeau and Koepka and Rahm and Cam Smith, you know, how are they going to fare this week? So there's all kinds of story angles to pursue. And so, you know, I kind of just sort of take them as they come. I've got some ideas and some things I want to work on. And obviously, we've been doing that leading up. I mean, a lot of the spring is spent kind of preparing for the Masters, yeah. Especially once they get to Florida, and thinking of ideas to write, you know, which I've already done some last week. You know, it's almost like the Masters has become almost like a 2 week thing. We look forward to it so much that we start writing about it probably earlier than any of the other majors.
Mm. You have written books on that we've talked about on Tiger and Phil. Mm-hmm. Again, for the lack of for clarity and just lack of time, in a nutshell, how'd you go about that process? Do you have anything you're working on in the future?
Yeah, that process is quite the challenge, to be honest with you. I mean, I've been a pretty much what you would call a daily, you know, golf writer or sports writer for the majority of my career. you react in real time and write it. You work on feature stories, but you're also doing other things. A book is a process. It's pretty much a 2-year process, each of the ones I've done. From the time of sort of formulating the idea and presenting it and pitching it to starting to report it, talk to as many people as you can, and then the writing process. So I had my first book came out in 2022. They're due very early. I mean, in this internet world where, I can send a story to my editor and within 5 minutes it's published, it is a little jarring to know that for a book, I've got to have that thing in 6 or 8 months in advance. So I'm actually am working on another book right now. It's about Tiger and Jack. It's sort of the exploring, I don't want to say who's the greatest, but sort of diving into the debate, and getting to the history of their relationship and how we got to this point and how why the majors matter. And that's going to come out basically next year. Next year will be 40-year anniversary of Jack's last major, the 86 Masters. He'll hit his 18th. And actually, it's part of it, but in some circles, it's believed to be his 20th because they used to count the U.S. Amateurs that he won. And then for some reason, at some point, they stopped counting them. And so I'm trying to get into that in the book as well. Tiger will be 50 this time next year. It seemed like a good time to explore, the sort of the comparisons and contrasts to their careers. Is Tiger, even though he didn't win as many, better than Jack, or have a better career? Or because Jack has the most majors, do we give it to him? To be honest with you, I'm not sure. I could probably argue for each guy, and I'm not sure how I will handle that at the end of the book. But it's been fun, getting there and reporting it and doing all that.
So when you go to Tiger and you go to Jack, or you go to Jack's people and Tiger's people and say you want to do this, but because of your longevity, do you go directly to them and say, "Hey, I'm thinking about this"?
There is no going to Tiger's people with any books. That is a long established. I wrote both those books without his cooperation. I mean, he didn't not cooperate. I mean, but he wouldn't sit down. Like, I didn't even ask for for either one because I knew the answer. The first one, I let them know. I mean, look, not to get too into the weeds, they seem to have a problem with this sort of thing. That would be like, I don't know, like it would be like JFK's family telling you can't write a book about him. I mean,
Got it.
they're in the public realm. It's not, it's, and frankly, if you even glanced at either of the books, they're very, very positive towards Tiger, especially the second book. It's a celebration of his career. And so will this one, so will it be this one. Now I did go to Jack's people, and Jack was gracious enough to give me some time. It's great. It was terrific, but a lot of these things are more about the reporting that you do and talking to others, piecing together certain tournaments, getting people's views. Why was Tiger so good? Why was Jack so good? Did Tiger face better competition? Did
Equipment.
Jack, did Jack, yeah, exactly. Equipment, all kinds of, the differences in that. There's a lot of different aspects to that story that I are kind of fun. I think people will enjoy, and people will have their own minds, made up as to who's the greatest. And I'm not sure, like if you told me I had to pick one, I could easily argue for Jack, but I could easily argue for Tiger. I think they both have compelling arguments.
Before I get you out of here, a couple other questions. You mentioned the words U.S. amateur. We have one out there this year, Bias there from Arizona State University. What do you know about him, or what are you looking forward to in looking at the amateur?
Yeah, it's gotten a lot harder for amateurs to do well at this level. They just don't have the school, the schooling or the competitive. I mean, there are outliers. There are guys that are the college players that are doing quite well in pro events. There was some interest in him from Liv because he's from Spain. A great player. It's a lot to take in, I think, to be a student and to try to be competitive in the Masters, because you just it's overwhelming, So I hope that he takes the attitude of just enjoy it, Don't put too much pressure on yourself. Have fun. Got nothing to lose. Learn from these guys. Hopefully, picks people's brains and practice rounds. I'm guessing he will set up some with some of these guys who are usually very, very gracious and giving their time and playing with the young guys. So, it'll be fun to see. There's always, a five or six amateurs in the field. The Masters is big on that. They give spots to the top two at the U.S. Amateur. They give spot to the winner, the British Amateur. They've also got spots to the Latin American and the Asia Pacific. So these are all, they kind of re remember their roots here at Augusta. Bobby Jones was a lifelong amateur. So no amateurs ever won the Masters, by the way. So I don't think it's going to be any easier to pull that off.
Who do you like this week? Who's playing well coming in, and the defending champion? Where do you see out of him right now?
Yeah, I mean, Scotty, it's you can't dismiss him. He hasn't won yet this year, but I think we give him a pass. He started late due to an injury. Seems to have some pretty good stuff going on here lately. He had a pretty good tournament in Houston. I don't if he was off, I don't think he was very far off. So I would expect him to be part of the story this week. I think the biggest story coming in is Rory. This is the 11th time now he's trying to complete the career Grand Slam by winning the Masters. And to be honest, he's never really been that close. In those 11 Masters, he's had several top 10s. He's even had a couple of top fives, but he really wasn't there on the back nine on Sunday. He's not really come down the stretch at a Masters, going all the way back to 2011. When he was the third round leader and shot 80 the last day and was leading on the 10th tee and imploded, he's really not been there with a chance. But Rory's the only guy on the tour who's got two wins this year, one at Pebble and he won the Players Championship. He's been really playing pretty nicely for 6 months. You kind of got to look at him and say, if not now, when?
When
Right? So you just kind of hope for his sake he gets off to a good start. I've always thought that it's hard to come back at Augusta. The winner is almost always in the top 10 after round one. He's almost always in the last group or second to last group going into the final round. And Rory has always seemingly found himself a little bit too far back. And it's not a place you can get aggressive to go after the lead. You kind of want to get off to a good start, and then you can control it more. You can try to be smart about the way you play and let the others make the mistakes. So we'll see if he can get off to a good start on Thursday.
As always, I appreciate your time and just touching base through the year. I really look forward to the book coming out next year on Tiger and Jack.
Thanks, Brad.
Bob, have a great week. Thanks.
Thanks so much. Take care.
And here he is, 2 weeks before the draft. It is the draft, Nick, Daniel Rios, breaking down the NFL draft. Daniel is going into the world of graduation from college. He is bright. He is brilliant. He loves this stuff. And because I am, and this is who we are, I have said, he's our draft, Nick. How's that? There's a buildup for you. All right, draft, Nick, here's the thing. What happened at Colorado this last week that is newsworthy, noteworthy? What jumped out to you?
Yeah, I mean, Shedeur Sanders, obviously biggest takeaway from everyone, majority of why all these NFL teams showed up. And he performed well. I mean, everyone knows he can throw football. I mean, God forbid, one of the top quarterbacks we're talking about can throw a football, against air. And he did. Ball placement was good. His accuracy was on point. I think, he couldn't really mess up. Just had to go out there, complete a couple passes, is exactly what he did. Obviously, if he missed a couple, deep balls and things like that, everyone would be freaking out, but he didn't. Looked good. And it's just really good to see. Obviously, Travis Hunter, went out and ran some routes. So that whole conversation's kind of brewing. It's still interesting. Really depends who you ask. Is he a receiver? Is he a cornerback? definitely will be interesting these upcoming weeks to kind of see, you know, what happens. And I think it really depends on the team that takes, you know, Travis and where he will end up. But overall, Colorado Pro Day, just, you know, it's a good chance to for those teams like the Giants and the Browns to go have an extra little bit of time with Shador to be like, are we going to take him top five? Are we going to do this? Or maybe, you know, I've seen, which has been interesting, maybe a team like the Saints come up and, you know, take him. So we'll definitely have to see how it plays out. But Shador, great pro day. Jimmy Horn also had a good day as well. He's a late flyer that I think, you know, some teams should take a look at on day three. But overall, good day for him and good day for the Sanders family.
Okay, so we're getting close to the end of pro days and all that stuff. And over these next 2 weeks, the lion season, as I call it, will be in full force. Teams are going to call press conferences, they're going to peddle out their general managers, and they're going to say nothing. And whatever they say is not going to be true. So, there's no way Tennessee is going to say, Cam Ward is our guy at number one. That's who we're taking. Let's end all discussion. He's our guy. From my point of view and seeing this through the years, are you convinced that he is the number one pick now? Are you willing to accept that, put that down?
I'm willing to accept it because you look at their roster and there's just no way that in my opinion that you're going to go into next year with Will Levis. I think they signed like Brandon Allen, like a bunch of just, you know, backup quarterbacks and go in and, you know, be serious and compete. You can't go into next year and sign Dan Moore, you know, $20 million or however much they gave him. So I think everything points in the direction to them taking Cam Ward. If they don't take Cam Ward, it is the biggest, you know, sell job in the history of, you know, in the NFL. Looking at their depth chart right now, it's Will Levis, Tim Boyle, and Brandon Allen. So you're telling me that's what you're going to go into with next year and, you know, expect to compete. You can. Maybe Will Levis takes a step, but how big of a step is it really going to be? Brian Callahan at the owners' meeting last week, he said something like, you know, obviously, you can't pass up talent with the first pick. You got to always take, you know, talent. But when there's a quarterback who, you know, you feel like is worthy of that pick, you know, it's kind of hard to pass on him. Something like that. Paraphrase it. Look it up. Don't quote me, but something along those lines.
Yeah, sure.
So he gives you the old-fashioned, open-ended answer of, will you take Cam Ward at one? Of course, he teases a little bit, but like he said, he's not going to give it away. But all signs should be, you know, headed in the direction that Cam Ward is number one overall pick.
Okay, so I'll take the opposite view on this. You're hearing him say one thing, but Shedeur Sanders, if I'm to believe mock drafts across the board, you went through one last week. Shedeur Sanders has dropped some. I always hear about quarterbacks dropping because everybody's lying right now. If you're
Yeah.
Tennessee, you have more than one need. You have much more than just the quarterback you need. Is the better strategy to take that number one pick and move back because Shedeur Sanders, Cam Ward, you could slice them in half, or you draft Nick, you're sitting there saying, come on, Brad. Cam Ward is this much better than Shedeur Sanders in this area, this area, this area, and this area. You have to take him because trading back, you're not getting near the quarterback.
I'm gonna have to say you're not getting near the quarterback. I think they're, for me, at least in my quarterback rankings this year, it's Cam Ward, Gap, and then Shedeur Sanders. So I think if Tennessee is for sure locked in on we want a quarterback, you just take Cam Ward. It's as simple as that. And I think an interesting part about, you know, this draft is if a team were to come up to one, you're not gonna get as much as other drafts where you maybe get, you know, two, a one, a second, maybe another second. You know, depending on what team's coming up, because, you know, as much as I like Cam Ward and he's the quarterback one of this draft class, compared to other years, he's maybe quarterback. Last year, I'd put him at quarterback, I'd say around five or six. So is a team really willing to come up and give, you know, three firsts, 2 seconds, something like that to come up at one? I don't think so. So I think you won't see as much noise of, you know, some team trying to come up to one or maybe three. You won't see a usual haul that we would see for those picks in past years.
Daniel Rios, the draft Nick, with us for a couple of minutes. Draft is in a couple of weeks. As we sit here right now, what is the most interesting storyline or two to you that you're watching over these next 2 weeks? I'll just give you Tyler Shuck from my point of view, and that's because I know Tyler. I know that he is scheduled to have a draft party here in the Valley. And there's a little bit of conversation that he could be a back end of the first round, which would be just an amazing story. Much like Brock Purdy lasting all the way to Mr. Irrelevant. That's mine. Do you have a couple or one that you're looking at saying, you know what, Brad, over the next couple of weeks, this player is one I'm keeping an eye on?
Yeah, I think I'm going to piggyback off you with the quarterbacks in late round one. Jalen Milroe accepted an invitation to go to Green Bay and be there in person. And as me and you both know, players who do that usually are kind of expected to be first round picks. Obviously, you can stay there until day two, but it's a very awkward moment to be sitting in that green room while you hear all these other names being called. And I think that's a really interesting, you know, point is because, you know, Milroe, heck of an athlete. Talk to anyone who's, you know, even looked at any of these players or looked at this draft. The first thing that they'll say about Milroe, most talented ball carrier maybe in this class. When he has the ball in his hands, it's special. He can make guys miss. He's really talented athlete. And he plays a quarterback position, which is, you know, we saw Jaden Daniels last year. You see Lamar Jackson. You see Josh Allen. Quarterbacks who can move with the ball are what teams are looking for nowadays. So with him, he has a heck of an arm. He can throw the ball, you know, 60 yards down the field. He can run fast. So you may be asking, you know, what's his problem? It's everything between 0 and 20. It's, you know, throwing those crossers over the middle. It's throwing timely. It's making reads. It's pocket presence. It's all those things where it's rough. It's rough around the edges. But will a team like Pittsburgh at 21 take a chance? Will they kind of repeat and take a swing on a quarterback? It's Jackson Dart's been linked to them. Will they take a chance on Milroe? I think it'll be fun to see on draft night which team, like you said, maybe trades back up, takes a Shook, takes a Milroe, takes a Dart. Those storylines are what really interests me. And I guess just to mention it as well, just from how many running backs go round one. We've heard how stacked this running back class is. How many are going to go round one? So those are probably the two biggest ones for me.
Daniel Rios, he is the draft Nick. Daniel and I are going to be out at Harrah's in Maricopa. And I have a draft party out there. There'll be more information coming along. We have a big name special guest that will be part of the festivities. I'll just tell you, Bears fans, you're going to want to be there. And we will be looking forward to that on draft night. Daniel, good stuff. We'll see you next week.